Hey, it's Christine from Storyworthy. Where were you during the Kennedy assassination? I wasn't born yet, but I've seen the Zapruder film.
You see that there's a shot that hits Kennedy in the head from the rear, and you see a shot hit the president from his temple from the other side.
It definitely appears that there was more than one bullet involved.
The law of physics, what I learned and what I've learned since I was in junior high school, you hit something from the back, it moves forward. You hit something from the front, it moves backwards. You watch the videotape and you see these two bullets and another bullet hit the president.
It really makes you think, what happened that day in Dallas?
Whether you believe that Lee Harvey Oswald did it, regardless of what you believe, the fact is who has the power to cover something up?
Hollywood manager and producer Barry Katz talks about his new documentary, I Killed JFK, today on Storyworthy. Stick around.
Hi, this is Barry Katz, and you're listening to the incredible podcast, Storyworthy.
Glad you guys tuned in today. Whether you're a longtime fan of the show or a new listener, welcome to Storyworthy. And I hope you guys enjoyed the story last week with author Maggie Rowe about her book Sin Bravely and her story about going to a psychiatric institute to overcome, you know, the feeling that she was going to hell. It is an unbelievable story. So if you haven't heard it, go back and listen. But not now. Now you need to stay here with me because I have a fantastic, tried and true, amazing guest. Manager producer Barry Katz is with me. And he brings forth an extraordinary story in honor of what would have been today, John F. Kennedy's 100th birthday. Today, May 29th. Can you believe it? The title of the story is I Killed JFK. Now, I don't think Barry killed JFK. That couldn't be because he'd be like, one or two when that happened. That's not right. But that would be a good story. But he has produced a documentary called I Killed JFK, and the film features two interviews with the only living person to have ever confessed to killing President John F. Kennedy from the now infamous Grassy Knoll in Dallas, Texas. I'm not positive that this guy is still in jail, because I know he went to jail for something else. Not murder, but attempted murder. I don't know. We're going to find out about that. I Killed JFK features a multitude of interviews with eyewitnesses, crime experts, law enforcement officials, national security experts, and FBI agents who will discuss the viability of the confession of this alleged killer. Now, of course, most people still believe that Lee Harvey Oswald was the killer, but this documentary could be a game changer. Now, all I know about JFK is that he was by far the hottest president we've ever had. Now, I know what you're thinking. Bill Clinton, 1992. Yes, that's true. He was up there. Because the charisma, especially, right? Now, as you guys know, that in the past, I have announced that I would sleep with any president or anyone on a bill or a coin. But then, of course, Donald Trump got into office, and now I've had to renege on that pledge. So that's not going to happen. But if JFK were around, even if he did just turn 100, I'd have sex with him. There. I said it. All right, you guys, before we get to Barry's story, I did want to remind you guys to follow me on Twitter and Instagram at Storyworthy, and why not head over to my website at storyworthypodcast.com and join my mailing list. Max, why don't you join my mailing list? You heard me. That would be awesome. And of course, I always need 5 stars and a good review over there at Apple Podcasts. You know, we're calling it Apple Podcasts now. We're not calling it iTunes anymore. iTunes is the music part. Apple Podcasts is the podcasting part. All right, you guys, he's here right now, Barry Katz. He is an iconic manager and a film and television producer who is universally known for launching the careers of Dave Chappelle, Jay Moore, Dane Cook, Bill Burr, Whitney Cummings, Louis C.K., to just name a few. Now, he helmed 2 separate top 5 Billboard Gold and Platinum and Double Platinum records, in addition to executive producing over 400 hours of TV. 400 hours of TV? That's what my daughter watched last week. Now, on the big screen, Barry has produced movies with Kate Hudson and Alec Baldwin, Jessica Alba, and Dane Cook. And most recently, he produced the documentary Misery Loves Company, an inside look at the dark side of stand-up comedy, starring Tom Hanks, Larry David, and Amy Schumer. I haven't seen that. I need to see that. I've seen a lot of your stuff, Barry, but I missed that one. In addition, he's the host of Industry Standard, an insider's look at Hollywood, which I listen to religiously. And you can find that over at Apple Podcasts. And I have to tell you, if you tell me that you're in show business, if you tell me you're in Los Angeles and you're trying to make something happen and you don't listen to Industry Standard, well, maybe you're not working hard enough. Do you hear me? Yeah, exactly. It's an important podcast. You really should listen. You can find Barry over at BarryKatz.com and also on Twitter at Barry Katz. And he's here right now. So please, wherever you are, folks, put your hands together for the one and only Barry Katz.
All right. What an honor to be here. What an introduction. That's incredible. That reminds me of what I do. Now I know why people feel so uncomfortable after I introduce them. But thank you so much for having me back. It means the world to me. So here's my story. And this is an unorthodox story. And you've had ordinary stories. You've had extraordinary stories. And you've had stories of things that happened to people. You've had stories that tied together. And my story is a very, very bizarre story about this documentary that's going to be coming out in theaters one night only on May 31st at a theater in the U.S. called I Killed JFK. So I'm going to share with you this bizarre story to all of your audience. I'm a comedy guy. I started as a stand-up comedian. I was inspired by listening to my father's old albums of Jonathan Winters and Bob Newhart and so many different things. And I did stand-up. I booked stand-up. I managed stand-up comedians who are actors, actresses, writers, directors. I produced television that's comedy. I did Last Comic Standing for 7 years. Every film that I ever did that was a scripted film was comedy. Everything. Okay? The only thing that I've ever done that was really, really dramatic is this, and I'm going to tell you why. So, in the profession that we're in, what happens is when you're around long enough, there's people who call you that you listen to. And I got a call from somebody who shall remain nameless, and he said, "Listen, I want you to see something." I said, "Great, send me the link." He's like, "No, you're not going to be sent the link. Somebody has to come into your office and show it to you on their laptop." I said, "Well, can't you just say, I don't really want to take a meeting with some..." They have to come in. They're going to come in. They're not going to look at you. They're not going to talk to you. They're going to come in. They're going to open up their laptop. They're going to press a button, play. You're going to watch. They're going to leave. I said, "This is crazy. What do you just tell me what it's about?" "I'm not going to tell you. I'm not going to tell you anything." I said, "Okay." So the guy comes, true to form, doesn't really talk to me, doesn't really look at me, is socially awkward and at the time, and just plays this video for me. And on the video were several rare and obscure and very, very unique found footage interviews and raw footage of everything having to do with the JFK assassination on November 22nd, 1963, that the public was not privy to. Interviews with former CIA agents, former security advisors, people who had been killed or murdered after telling their story. And the biggest interview of all on there was a man who has been in prison for God knows how many years, who just got out, who is the only person living that's ever admitted to killing Kennedy. And on this video, there were these select pieces of things that I saw, and one of them was a story that he told, which is within my story, of how he was a runner for the mob in Chicago. he was hanging out with Chuck Nicoletti and Johnny Roselli, who were two of the main people under Sam Giancana in Chicago. And he knew of a plot to kill Kennedy, and he knew that the Chicago people that he was working with were involved, and he knew that these two people were scheduled to be shooters that day. And he was flown into Dallas to be a driver for them. The first assignment he had was to drive to a diner where he met Jack Ruby, who passed an envelope to one of these two guys that had the diagram, the new diagram to Dealey Plaza, where the president was taking a new route. That was his first meeting he had. When it came to the morning of the assassination, he was supposed to meet these two guys there. And what happened was only one of them showed up, and he asked them, you know, where's the other guy? He says he's not. The CIA has called off the assassination, and he doesn't want to participate. He says, well, why are we here? He said, fuck them. I don't care what they say. I'm here to do a job. I'm going to do it. Will you be my backup? He said, he was 23 at the time. He said, I'd be honored to be your backup. Just tell me what you want me to do. He says, well, if the president doesn't get hit in the head by my shot, then I want you to be the guy to take him out. Where would you be? And where do you think I should be? And he says, well, I think you should be in the Dow Tech building. You got a clear view there. He said, that's what I thought. That's where I'm going to be. Not the Texas School Book Depository. He says, where would you be? He said, I'd be behind that fence on the grassy knoll. It's perfect. It's like, you know, really close. And they go back there, and he looks, and he says, but there's an obstruction of the sign, you know, this the expressway sign. If he's going to come through there, you're in the expressway, you're only going to have one shot. And the killer said, all I need is one shot. I mean, it's perfect. I'm here. It's lined it up perfectly. And if you don't hit him, I'm there. And so that's part of the interview that was on there, including his process and how it all went down. And it just blew me away. And I searched and had the people in my office search for who had the rights to these interviews and this raw footage and all this stuff out there. And every lead I went through here in this country, somebody had it, but they were afraid to give it up. They didn't want to give it up. And so I found a guy in Amsterdam who had the rights to about 10 different things, including both interviews with this person who allegedly killed JFK. And he had 20 different interviews with other experts. And he had raw footage, and he had found footage. And he'd been doing documentaries that he'd been trying to sell off of his website, but he couldn't get any traction. No one would, you know, he couldn't get the traction. I said, if you give me all of this stuff, I will construct a documentary around this person and get your story out. I'm not going to take no for an answer. I will go and I will make it happen. I said, I want you to know something, though. I don't have a dog in this fight. I'm not a conspiracy theorist. I'm not every day saying, this happened, these people did this. You know, I just am a storyteller, and I love stories, and that's why I love your podcast, and I love what you do, because everything revolves around a great story. Anything that's successful has a great story. You don't have a great story, it's not successful. And these people who have dedicated their lives to telling the story, many of them have been killed. It's fascinating to me. And I think the stories, which have not been seen by like the majority of the world, I thought that would be a really interesting thing to show. So I told him that. He gave me the license and the right to take all of his footage, and I edited together this documentary called I Killed JFK. And I also thought to myself, I for JFK's 100th birthday, that I wanted to get a theatrical release. And I was failing. Like all of us out in the business, you try hard, you believe in something, and I couldn't get it done. And I'm not a quitter, and I don't give up, but I will say to you, I was sitting on the fetal position on my couch at home thinking, I failed. And I got a call from Screen Vision and Chaos Connect, these two distributor companies that do special event theatrical presentations and theater of one night only events. And they said, we looked at it, we love it, we want to do it. And I was like, oh my God, this is fantastic. And so what I did then was, I thought, how am I going to make this great for everybody to really believe this story? And so then I reached out to five of the foremost living experts in the world on the JFK assassination. People like Zach Shelton, who's a former FBI special agent who was actually involved in putting this guy in jail. Followed the case for like 30 years. I got Gordon Ferry, who was a national security advisor for five presidents. I got Judith Vary Baker, who was Lee Oswald's lover at the time. I got Barr McClellan, who's a guy who wrote the book Blood, Money, and Power. It was a New York Times bestseller. And I got Jim Mars, who was the guy who was a journalist, a lead journalist in 1963 in Dallas, has been following this his whole career, has so much information. He also was the guy who was in the interview with the person who allegedly killed JFK from the grassy knoll. So here I am. I get them together and I do a Skype, whatever you call it, interview with everybody. I have like 12 and a half hours of interviews with these people that if you listen to all of them, it would literally make you want to cry. It's so powerful because you're talking to people who are in their 70s and 80s who are well-educated, reputable. Like, these people aren't like crackpots. These people are incredibly viable people telling you all tidbits of the same story and how it all leads to one situation. And so put all that together for this special presentation on May 31st in theaters. And so the story I want to tell you within the story for your audience is an understanding of what these people shared and what blew me away the most. And there's a few different things that messed me up and will mess anybody up who watches this. Is that the majority of the population has been told that Lee Harvey Oswald killed Kennedy from the sixth floor of the Texas School Book Depository building. Well, a few of the things I can share with you that I don't think will ruin the movie for you and the panel discussion, because it's known if you look for it, is the fact that there isn't one person that was a witness that saw Oswald in the window. You know, you think if somebody's firing a shot out of a window and there's thousands of people somewhere, you're going to see the person. Nobody had a recognizable description of him, whatever. But yet an hour to 2 hours later, miraculously, the police go into a movie theater that's almost empty, that has people in it watching a movie, and they find Oswald there, and they bring him into custody and charge him with killing the president. Now, you can kill somebody in this office, and you won't be charged in an hour or two. But back then, the question is on everybody's mind is, well, how did you find the guy in the movie theater, and how would you know he was in the movie theater? And why would you charge him when you don't have anything? The next thing that I learned that I'll share with your audience, which is pretty amazing, is the fact that what you learn is that even though the person in this movie that was associated with the Chicago mob, who was an enemy of Kennedy's, says he pulled the trigger, you learn that there's a lot of people that can kill people, but there aren't a lot of people who can cover it up. And one of the things that's so hurtful about what you learn in this is that there are a number of similarities between Trump and JFK that will blow people away. You just don't understand it because you think of JFK as this like great-looking matinee idol kind of guy, 40, just bigger than life. You don't think of him as having any enemies because there was no social media then. There weren't 1,700 news outlets. There weren't videos playing back then. The Zapruder film, that film where you see Kennedy's assassination, this is the most watched video in history. I don't care if there's a billion hits on something on YouTube. This has been watched more. But in 1963... people didn't have access to the movie. They weren't going to show it on the news, the president getting shot. So there was no evidence to the American people in the world of what happened. So that when the government says that Lee Harvey Oswald killed the president with a shot from the rear, and a commission put together, the Warren Commission, puts together a 700-page document that says it's single bullet that killed the president from the rear, a lone gunman. It's easy to believe it in the media because that's all you have. You have, you know, some reputable newspapers, and you have the three networks. Now you can't do that. Joe Mixon hits a girl in a cafeteria or a bar. He's suspended. Why is he suspended? He's suspended because let's go to the videotape. Isaiah Thomas for the Celtics recently got fined $25,000 for swearing at a fan. Why? Because a videotape came out from a fan. No one had this videotape except the government at that time. So now when you look at the videotape, you slow it down, you see that there's a shot that's hit the president. You don't know if it's his back, his neck. You see that there's a shot that hits Kennedy in the head from the rear, and you see a shot hit the president from his temple from the other side. The law of physics, what I learned and what I've learned since I was in junior high school, you hit something from the back, it moves forward. You hit something from the front, it moves backwards. You watch the videotape, and you see these two bullets and another bullet hit the president, but everybody in the government sold what happened on a single bullet that killed the president by Lee Harvey Oswald. So as I wrap up this story, which is long-winded, I just want to share a few things. Whether you believe that Lee Harvey Oswald did it, he was in Russia many of the times before the assassination. You could say that the Russians had something to do with Oswald. He also worked for the CIA. Whether you believe that the Chicago mob did it and this person, after you see this documentary, that he was involved and killed the president, which I believe is very convincing. Whether you believe that the Cubans were involved because of how Kennedy handled the Cuban Missile Crisis. Whether you believe that the FBI was involved because of how Kennedy wasn't happy with J. Edgar Hoover and wanted to restructure that, or whether you believe it was the CIA who he wanted to restructure as well, or it was LBJ who disliked Kennedy and his brother very much and wanted to be the president of the United States, regardless of what you believe, the fact is, who has the power to cover something up? the Russians don't have the power to call Bethesda Hospital and have the autopsy doctored. The Cubans don't have the power to call the Warren Commission and say, could you make it a single bullet through the, you know, back and one shoot? The mob can't go in and change evidence. They're not going to do that. So that's what's scary about what you learn through this movie, is there's only a few different groups that could do it, and those groups are the most powerful groups in our government. And so the last thing I'll tell you, which came from the National Security Advisor to five presidents, Gordon Ferry, who I interviewed in a panel afterwards, he said something really, really fascinating. He said, the similarities from Trump and Kennedy are obvious. And he didn't say this, but I'm saying this. If, God forbid, Trump were assassinated tomorrow, would we be surprised? No. Would we be surprised if somebody came forward and said, yeah, I'm in the FBI, I killed him, God forbid? We wouldn't be surprised, because we know it's obvious that he has enemies. Even if Trump were sitting here with me, he would say, yes, I have people who are against me. All through his campaign, he talked about all the people that were against him. And there's many factions that are against Trump. And in the media every day, you can see them. Back then, Kennedy had all these enemies. We didn't see who they were. We didn't know who they were. We know now. And so this guy, Gordon Ferry, he said, when Trump says he wants to drain the swamp, what do you think is at the bottom of the swamp? And the last thing he said, which was so bone-crushing, the end of this story, he said, and this is a guy that's like, you know, this guy, when you're a national security advisor, you're not a guy who's like behind a dumpster somewhere telling a story. This guy was chilling, and he said, our country is in much turmoil now as it was in the 60s. We're just as much danger. The similarity is you're just a Cuban Missile Crisis. The missiles were pointed at us. It was a dangerous time. The missiles are pointed at us now. And if we make the wrong move, anything can happen, including thermonuclear war. And I'll never forget this as long as I live. After he said thermonuclear war, there was a pause, and I was just like, took my breath away. And then he said, and I know a lot about that. And so in conclusion to the story, one of the things he said that blew me away, other than that, he said, November 22nd, 1963 was like a party in Dallas. It was like a celebration. It was a social event. People from all over the world flew in to see John Kennedy be assassinated. He was just one of the few people who didn't know what was going to happen.
Wow, Barry Katz. I'll tell you something. You know, I'm not a conspiracy theorist at all, but when you start talking about this stuff, it gets so exciting. Like, I'm squeezing my pen. Like, did you hear any other theories when you started investigating into this? Did anything else emerge? What was it, always this one man?
No, it's not. You know, I don't want to say it's this one man was a man who allegedly pulled the trigger, and the only person who's ever admitted to pulling the trigger. You know what he would say? He would probably be mad at me if I said, you killed JFK, because what he would say is, well, I don't know if I killed him. I mean, you know, my partner's bullet that hit him in the top of the head, that could have been the killing shot. I just, you know, maybe he was already dead by the time that I hit him.
Had you ever thought about the whole JFK conspiracy before this person brought this computer into your office?
Well, you know, when I was younger, I remember walking into the kitchen as a young child and seeing my mother crying at the sink. You know, when you watch somebody from behind and they're crying and you can see their shoulders moving. And we used to have this little black and white portable television with the rabbit ears on the counter, a little 13-inch. And I couldn't figure out why she was crying, and I looked up, and it was the funeral procession of Kennedy. And ever since that time, you know, I have thought to myself, what is the truth? What really happened? And but I'm not a guy who's been searching and is a conspiracy theorist.
Yeah, because this is really outside of your wheelhouse to produce something like this. And you're kind of, I mean, not your whole reputation, but you're putting like a lot on the line to now you're going down this path. First of all, the documentary path, because you haven't really done documentaries before.
Yeah, I did the Misery Love Comedy one.
Oh, right, okay.
Which, again, was the dark side of comedy. I did a Houdini documentary because my uncle's the number one expert on Houdini in the world and owned the water torture case.
Get out of here, really?
And I did a Heidi Fleiss documentary for HBO where I, unfortunately, I didn't get any firsthand experience or research to do that one, so that wasn't worth it.
So you have done documentaries. All right.
But not anything like dramatic like
yeah.
this.
Okay, so did you travel to Dallas? Did you go down there to check it out for yourself? Because apparently there's a great tour that you can take. My sister said there's this fabulous...
The six-book depository.
Tour, right.
The six-floor depository.
Yeah,
what
the Texas Book
Texas
Depository.
Texas Book Depository Tour.
Did you go down there?
No, I did not for this.
It's supposed to be pretty interesting to see what they have to say.
People speak there all the time, and a lot of the people who've interviewed in this documentary go there and speak. They do a convention there once every year, that week of November, where all these people speak and do seminars.
So the guy from the Chicago mob, he is suggesting that they had issues, obviously, with Kennedy and maybe his brother and maybe Bobby Kennedy as well, that they were coming down on the Chicago mob and this was the retribution?
Yeah, and this was just one area. That's all he – this was his world. He wasn't in the world of wondering what anybody else was doing, but he did have contacts that were in the CIA that would call him and give him directions and orders and things to do as well as the Chicago mob, and you found out that they were very knowledgeable about each other's actions and talked to each other frequently.
And so what kind of gun did he say he was using at that time?
That's an interesting thing. The guns that he had that day, they were all different. And the gun that he decided to use was a experimental gun at the time called a fireball. And what's really interesting that I'll share with your audience, I hope I'm not giving too much away, but you deserve this, is that the killer had this thing that he did after every person that he killed, where he would take the shell casing and he would bite down on it and leaving an impression, and he would leave it there. Or he would drop it on the ground or, you know, sometimes whatever he would do with it. And that bullet was found with teeth marks in it.
Get out of here.
And he would never have known, and no one would ever have known that.
Can they do DNA on that? Is there any, who has that?
Well, they did test and they found that it was teeth marks. They didn't match his teeth marks.
So that guy's out of prison now. He
yes.
spent a long period of time for attempted murder. He was trying to kill a cop, I think, and then he got away. So he goes to jail, or the cop got away. He didn't kill anybody at that point. At that point,
I don't really know his full story about what he did.
Did you
before.
Talk to him at all?
I've had email exchanges with him and his best friend. But I never spoke to him. I just went through 2.5 hours of interviews with him.
Wow.
To make the
So he's in his 70s. He must be.
I think he could be in his 80s now.
Really?
As a matter of fact, I'm sure he is because
he
was 23
he
at the time. No. So if he's 23 at the time and it's 54 years ago, he's...
Why would he not want to be famous with this information? I mean, this seems like something like a... Who wouldn't want to know about this?
Here's another thing. What you know, you always look at patterns and you always look at why things are the way they are and how they are. When you do your podcast, I don't think I'm saying anything out of school. You do it to inspire people, but you also do it, hopefully, to make some money.
Yeah.
This killer was visited by Oliver Stone, I think, three times to try to get information for him to make the movie JFK. Offered him money, wanted him to be involved. He turned him down every time. He's been offered money to do things. Up until this time, I've never known him to take money. The interviews that he did for this film never took a dime. So, obviously, that says something. If somebody doesn't even try to have money for maybe their family or...
Did he have children or a wife, or do we know any of that?
I didn't follow that story, so that's not what I was really interested in.
Yeah.
I just was interested in this one particular story about him and his relationship with the...
Have you ever talked to anybody else, those other mobsters that would have been around at that time?
They're all gone.
They're all gone now. Yeah.
They were all killed.
At this age. Because of mob activities, you're thinking. Or natural death, or are you... Is this another conspiracy?
There's no natural deaths. They were all killed.
Whacked.
But I can't tell you how or why they were killed or whatever. And I didn't get all I know is this about this documentary. There's over 100 people who have tried to come out and tell their personal story about what happened, who died mysteriously. And why these people in this film who have told their stories and are telling their stories are still alive, I don't know. Maybe they started telling their stories after it really meant something. You know, for this film, let's just put it in perspective for you. This film that's, again, one night only, May 31st, you can go to ikilledjfk.com to get tickets. So let's pretend that in all the theaters that it's in, every show sells out. Let's pretend 100,000 people go to see this movie. In terms of the scheme of things and what that means to anybody who would be upset at anything, that's like a blip.
Nothing.
So they probably don't care about these people's stories because there's not enough people listening or hearing. It's not like millions and millions of people are hearing their story, so they probably don't care anymore.
I don't know about that, man. I mean, JFK conspiracy theorists are really, it's a whole subculture. I mean, it's almost like, the people are into UFOs, people are into JFK, people are in, there's a lot of people that really, the 9/11 conspiracy theorists, people really get into that. And it is enticing.
It is enticing. And the only thing I can say about this is that from a factual standpoint is the fact that you have videotape evidence. Let's pretend Oswald fired a shot that hit the president. Let's just say it happened. And let's fight and get on our soapbox and say it happened. On the videotape, that's great. He got hit from the back a couple of times. But he also got hit from the front.
For sure.
You can see it. It's obvious. There were over 250 people at Dealey Plaza that ran towards the grassy knoll in the smoke.
Yeah.
So even if you don't believe that the guy in the film that I'm suggesting you go see on May 31st, if you think he didn't do it, the fact is someone was there.
Yeah. What was that umbrella thing? What was that going? Somebody had an umbrella.
The Umbrella Man.
What was that all about? Because it wasn't raining, right?
Yeah.
So that was like...
A lot of people thought that person was giving a sign to somebody and whatever it was. Again, simultaneously at that time. But regardless of what a conspiracy, all that means is that more than one person was involved.
Right.
People think conspiracy, they think, oh, this is that, it's just the most basic point. But again, regardless of whatever you believe, which might be a viable opinion, whether you think that LBJ did it and that's the only person, the fact is that regardless of who did it, a 800-pound or 700-pound report that was endorsed by the government says that there is one shot that killed the president from the rear. When they tried to recreate, this is another thing that doesn't make any sense at all. the gun that they found in the book depository, okay? They did tests with this gun. It was a faulty gun. It needed two little shimmies underneath the scope to be able to get it to the right way. They didn't find any shimmies up there, okay? And every expert that they had to try to take the shots in time, when they did all these tests afterwards, they couldn't do it because the gun wouldn't fire all but every 2 seconds. It was impossible for all the shots to come from that gun. And so the evidence, but forget that. Let's pretend you don't believe that's the case. Let's pretend you believe that the gun does shoot or whatever and that they're telling you a wrong story and people are just saying. The videotape, it's there for everyone to see.
Yeah, the car wasn't going that fast. It wasn't like the car was speeding and so there was a certain inertia going this way and then as the shot went this way and his head went, it was only going like 10 miles an hour, if even that.
Yeah.
Listen, a little earlier you were talking about, you know, being in show business and, you know, there's those days where you're curled up on the couch because you're trying to get something to happen and it's not happening. I think a lot of people out there would find that hard to believe with you specifically because you've had a lot of success. But I remember you one time telling me that you better believe Johnny Depp is pissed that the Pirates of the Caribbean 4 or whatever didn't do as well as 1 and 2 or something. And I remember thinking, no, and that never occurred to me. Because I'm just saying, for people sitting in middle America or right outside of L.A. or maybe in L.A., they don't think Johnny Depp has a bad day.
Everybody has bad days. Everybody has self-doubt, which is doubt is the number one dream killer in America. But everyone, it's
doubt or fear.
Well, doubt, you know, fear, you can overcome fear and get to where you want to go. But nervousness and success don't go together. Fear, there can be a fear inside that, like, you know, it's like it that drives you. A lot of artists are driven by it, the fear of failure.
Of course.
And so they just keep driving forward. But if it's fear, negative fear, then you're right. But one of the things I want to share with your audience, I went to a screening last night of a movie with Carl Reiner. And
I love him so much. And in the I just think he's the best. I would love to meet him.
Yeah, and the movie
was 94.
Yeah, and the movie was all about 90-year-olds and their viability. Whatever.
Mel Brooks, yeah.
Is Mel Brooks and Dick Van Dyke and Norman Lear
and
Carl Reiner.
That's terrific.
And so I'm watching the movie. In the movie, Jerry Seinfeld, who's arguably probably one of the most successful comedians of all time in history. He admitted that when he gets up in the morning and as he's like tossing around trying to get himself up, he feels shitty. He feels shitty about the world, his life, everything that's happening. And it's not till he gets up and starts moving and get going that he feels well. And to be in the room when these guys did a panel, and there were 4 of these guys that I just mentioned, I got in my car and I drove home and I was crying, because I was crying for a couple of different reasons. Number one, because these people are in their 90s and they know any day, you know, you make plans and God laughs, but they still get up and they still go and they're incredibly productive. And the other reason, the most part I cried, is because, and what's amazing about this medium that you have, and for me with my podcast, Industry Standard, I got to witness something last night, hearing these people in a panel after the movie talk, that is a once-in-a-lifetime
thing.
Amazing. And I couldn't believe that only 500 people or whatever were there to witness it. And part of, and all their stories.
Well, how big was the theater?
Maybe like 500 or 1,000 or
so
something.
Was it full or not full?
It was very full, but there were empty seats.
But that's L.A. too.
Yeah. The point I'm trying to make is that we tell a story on our podcast and, you know, hundreds of thousands, maybe millions of people listen. I get to be in that room and see that, and that doesn't get to be seen by anybody, that panel discussion.
Who moderated that?
Tom Bergeron.
Oh, I love him.
And so when I got the interview Norman Lear, or George Shapiro, who helped put the film together with, with Amy Hyatt. It just was an amazing thing, and to know that for the purpose of what we're talking about, the story is just what it's all about, and that's your. I don't mean to give you a big head, but your podcast is in title what everything is all about, and you can't. You've had fear. I've had. You know, I sit around. I always think to myself, today is going to be my last day doing this. It's all going to go to shit.
You think that?
That drives me.
Yeah.
Because I can't. I don't want to sit around thinking to myself, okay, everything's going to go great. I have to think to myself every day that another door is going to be shut in my face, and I have to break down that door to live another day in this
business.
But
you work so much. Would you say you're a workaholic?
That's what women say who dump me.
Well, let me ask you, how does it work with your family? I mean, you have boys. They're very energetic. They're teenagers, right? So they need you.
Yes, they do.
So how does this work?
Well, to be honest with you, I was telling a story the other day about how the reason why I don't get in relationships with women anymore, and I'm not looking for that, is because when you meet an extraordinary woman, which I'm sure you consider yourself that, that person deserves to be number one on the call sheet. And in my life, I don't think that person could ever be number one on the call sheet because I have my boys.
Sure.
Who are co-billed at number one. And then, you know, my work, which is very important to me. And then after that, I think that's no woman who's great and extraordinary deserves to be number four on the call sheet.
It depends on their situation, of course, if they have children and then, you know, but you're right. I mean, it gets to be juggling an awful lot. And here's something we have in common you might not know. We had the same mediator in our divorces.
Really?
Yeah, I actually recommended your mediator to your ex because she worked well with me. And now there's three other couples that have gone through her, and I think I should be getting a kickback. That's what I think.
I think you should get a kickback. I can negotiate that for you.
I think we should work something out. Okay, wait, two more things. This movie, JFK, everybody should go see it Wednesday, May 31st.
It's only one night only. You can only see it one night. You go to ikilljfk.com. You can see the trailer, you can see the synopsis, you can read about the panelists that I interviewed afterwards, and you can go and it'll take you to whatever state you're in or city, and you can figure out where it is. And
because there will
tickets.
Be a theater in most every city playing this film.
Yes.
On May 31st.
Yes.
That's pretty exciting, man. Congratulations.
Well, thank you.
It's enticing, isn't it? I mean,
it's only enticing if people go see it because sadly that's the only time they're going to be able to see it.
Yeah, but this is history. This is American history, and I don't see how this isn't going to be either a big deal and really do well, or at least have legs and stay of interest. Because if you want to know about JFK, this is part of it.
One of the most flattering things that can ever happen to you in your life. There's a person who I know that's near and dear to me that I was reading her cover letter. And in the cover letter, it said that when she worked with Steve Martin, she finished her work with Steve Martin. He didn't say anything the entire time she was working with him. And then he finished his final thing, and he went up to her and he said, "Thank you. That was flawless. Mm. Flawless work."
Wow.
And so when you get those compliments from people that are at the highest levels, it lets you know you're doing the right thing. And with this film, with this guy in Amsterdam who's been dedicating, God knows, 40 years of his life to it and tried to put together various documentaries and things that were successful and told me that it was the best representation of what he could ever imagine. And these people that I interviewed who watched it and who really were blown away by this. And this film, you know, I don't mean to get... this film will change your life forever. I mean, there's nothing...
Those are big words, man.
I say this and I don't... I will not tell... You can look at any interview I've ever done and you try to find something I've said that about that I worked on There's something about this thing that when you get out of this theater, it changes you as a person. And unfortunately, the world and the country hasn't had the opportunity to see this, and now you will if you go on May 31st.
Really, that's a very big deal. And then to have that feeling of satisfaction that you satisfied at least those five people, those, you know, the FBI agent, and all, that's amazing.
I just wanted them to tell their story. And again, I don't mean to be a broken record, but stories need to be told. They're important. Again, I'm not going to sit here on this radio show and say, hey, that person's story, I will go to the death for that person and I will fight for that story. I just want to be somebody who helps people to tell their stories.
And now a lot of people, now that they've heard you tell this story, they're going to be coming to your office with, you know, their laptops, and they're just going to be putting it in front of you. Watch this, Barry, because they know that's how to get to you now.
Well, you do have a laptop here. I'm a little nervous.
All right, you guys, listen, we got to wrap it up. Thank you so much. I really appreciate you coming over and telling another story.
Thank you.
Or me coming to you.
I can't believe I made the cut for a second story.
It's unbelievable. It's unbelievable. You guys, I know you love Barry Katz, so head over to Twitter and tell him you loved his story. And then, of course, go see I Killed JFK on Wednesday, May 31st. And by the way, when you're over at Twitter, hit me up as well, at Storyworthy. And, of course, you can always email me at info@storyworthypodcast.com. And join us next week on Storyworthy for author Kelly Carlin and her story about sleeping with a pop star in Ryan O'Neal and Farrah Fawcett's bed.
I made bedroom eyes at Leif and said, what a great idea that was. Leif got the message loud and clear.
Don't miss the fantastic Kelly Carlin next week on Storyworthy. All right, I want to thank everybody over at Wondery Media, including Hernan Lopez and Jeffrey Glazer. And one more time, on behalf of the very talented Barry Katz, thank you so much for coming.
Thank you. It was an honor.
My name's Christine Blackburn, saying, make it a Storyworthy week.
Thanks for joining us on the Storyworthy Podcast. We'll be back next week with all new stories. Subscribe to Storyworthy on iTunes and visit the Storyworthy website at storyworthypodcast.com.